When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan. Sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 105, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. I got you for four more hours in this midnight ride as we take it till 5 a.m. in the warm-up show, 888-808-1019. Talking a little bit of baseball, a little bit of breaking news, which I might harp on a little bit because I never get any breaking news. Nothing ever happens at 4 o'clock in the morning. Nothing good anyway, if you ask Tom Coughlin. So, Randy Arozarena, the first piece really moved in this trading deadline. And I know what everyone's going to say. I'm sorry, let me finish it. Randy Arozarena traded to the Seattle Mariners from the Rays. I got to see what the pieces are. If you could find that for me, Alex, exactly what it is. Now, I'm not going to know the inner workings of the Seattle Mariners minor league system. So when we hear the names, hopefully we can get in, someone's going to tell us what level or where they are in the pecking order in Seattle, so we get an idea of what kind of prospects it's going to cost for an Arozarena, who is obviously a threat, who obviously burst onto the scene against the Yankees in the 2020 playoffs when he just, you know, went off, and since then has had good years. This year having a down year, other than when he's playing the Yankees, but Arozarena, I got to look at his contract, too, to try and get an idea of where the market is. But, Ged, you got something?
Yes. Yeah, so the Mariners are trading outfielder Adin Smith, right-hander Brody Hopkins, and then another player to be named.
Okay. And it doesn't say...
All right, look at that. Those are the full details just coming from
okay.
Jeff Passan.
Right. Okay. So we'll see. I'm going to try and find out exactly what level those pieces are. But okay, we'll figure out what that is. But that's the first big move, and it's time now. And I know the Yankee fan, twofold. One, now that means you're going to have to play him again because the Yankees do go to Seattle at the end of the year for a three-game set, and he's absolutely killed the Yankees. But it also is a piece. I think this is a positive thing for the New York Yankees in the next few days. Because the Mariners are desperate for offense. This is not a piece the Yankees are looking for anyway. I think it opens it up. Hopefully it eliminates the Mariners from having the absolute urgency. Doesn't mean they still can't make a deal. Doesn't mean they still won't be in on a lot of different players. But hopefully it takes away from the urgency of trying to go out and get an India or another infielder where that's where the Yankees have their sights set. But here's the thing. We've all been, you know, I've been saying it. I know I listened to Evan. The deals aren't out there yet. You got to wait for the deadline. Teams are waiting. They're still establishing whether they're buyers or sellers. You're going to have to wait and see. Well, this is the first real big piece. Go out there and start picking up the phone right now, Brian Cashman, because they need it now. They need it desperately right now. This series against Boston is huge. You would love to be able to add an offensive piece to this team for this series. Activate Stanton. Activate him. I watched video of him jogging around the bases. That's it. He's healthy enough to play. That's all he does. The man, there's nothing with running in Stanton's life anymore. All he does is jog. There's no running. His nose doesn't run. His refrigerator doesn't run. There is no running whatsoever. Like, honestly. When he misplaces his punctuations, they don't even call it a run-on sentence. I can't think of anything else that's as dumb as it gets.
No, I like those. Okay. But so I just found out that the pieces were fourth and sixth round picks in the 2023 draft, okay. And Arozarena still has 2.5 years left on
right.
His deal.
All right, so now that's a guy with control. You get 2.5 years of Arozarena. They're trading fourth and sixth round picks. Now that doesn't necessarily mean where they are now currently sitting inside the Mariners roster or farm system, what their pecking order is. Is it their fifth best prospect? Is it their 25th best prospect? So we got to see like what it's going to take, because that's what you kind of measure up. Arozarena, who is an outfielder having a down season but has a track record over the last few years of being pretty damn good and a track record of being a good postseason player, under 2.5 years of control, you would think you'd have to give up a fairly pretty penny to get him from the Rays. And now the other thing about the Rays is they've typically been one of the smarter, if not the smartest, organization in all of baseball. And they've done more with less than any organization in baseball. And you're always leery, like the same thing when you make a deal with the Patriots. You traded with Bill Belichick and the Patriots, you were very concerned about what you were getting back, because why would Bill trade good players? And now it feels like the Rays are kind of like that. Like, you're hesitant. Look at all the different trades they've made. They got Glass now. They got, like, all the different moves they were able to make and get pieces. Paredes, who was nothing, became, you know, right now probably the crown jewel of the rest of the trading deadline. So, offensively at least. I mean, you're hesitant anytime you want to make a deal with the Rays. But they needed it, and the Yankees are looking to Paredes to make a move. You got something else.
Yes. So Aiden Smith, the outfielder, was the 12th prospect for the Rays.
Okay.
And Brody Hopkins.
For the Mariners.
Yeah.
12th for the Mariners.
Yeah, for the Mariners. Okay. And Brody Hopkins, the right-handed pitcher, was 22nd.
Okay. So it's 12 and 22nd. Not that much. I'm surprised the Rays did it right now. I guess there really wasn't a lot out there for a Rosarena. That's not a bad deal. You thrust him into a pennant race. You hope he gets hot. He's been bad. The other thing is some of the metrics are bad, and that's how you know. That's where the Rays lie. His metrics on fastballs and his bat speed has really fallen off. That's why they're willing to make moves. All right, but let's get back to the calls. 101.11 on the Fan. McMonagle here with you. As we said, a Rosarena. The Mets are for real. 4-game winning streak. They take care of the Braves last night with a little bit of help, and there's nothing wrong with that. Good teams get the help. Good teams get luck. As Jeff McNeil continues his hot streak and lofts one to right field, and Laureano outruns it. It lands for a base hit. They win in extra innings after the Braves crapped all over themselves in the top of the 10th. And the New York Mets have taken the first two of the have swept the New York Yankees and just took those two games at Yankee Stadium and followed it up with a huge series heading right into the deadline against the team they're chasing in the wild card. Take care of the Braves in game one, beat Chris Sale, and are now 1 game in the loss column behind the Atlanta Braves for the top wild card spot. And for me, it's time to add. And not just add little, add big. Bigly. Andy in Iowa. What's up, Andy?
Hello again. The Mets are for real. How are you?
How are you? I'm good.
Good. Good to hear. It's nice to be, go into the trade deadline and not have to worry about who we're going to add for DH like every single, the last couple off seasons. I remember when the Mets were supposed to be, in a good position with Dom Smith and Pete Alonso as our, one of them were going to be our DH for a long time. So it's nice that we're not talking about that anymore.
That is true.
Has Stearns tipped his hand at all? I mean, I feel like I've watched every press conference, and he hasn't like kind of said whether he's leaning one way or the other in terms of going all in or not.
Yeah, I'm sorry. One more time. I apologize. I'm reading stuff on a Rosarena. I apologize. I missed that last thing you said, Andy. Nope. What? Go ahead.
Yeah, has he tipped his hand at all? Tipped his hand at all?
Stearns
at all?
No.
Yeah.
No, other than, I think everyone assumes they're done selling. There was some thought of buying and selling and trying to do both. I suppose that's still on the table, but I think at the bare minimum, I think everyone would expect whatever moves are made are going to be made in the effort of improving this team. Even if it's a buy-sell situation, at the end of it, the thought process will probably be, oh, they bought this, they sold that so they could buy this, and ultimately they're better now. So I don't know at what level. I don't think I still don't know if they're in the market for a Tanner Scott kind of a rental piece, just trading a guy away for without control. Like, I don't know if that's the kind of move they would make. I don't know if they're really in the big, big, like, trade for an ace starting pitcher like Skubal or anything like that, where I think they should at least dip their toes in the water of those conversations. I don't know where they are with that, but I would think they're firmly in the let's improve this team. I just don't know how marginal they want to do that.
Yeah, interesting. And I guess Beatty's, I don't know, his future with the Mets is kind of up in the air.
No doubt. I mean, Vientos, while better defensively for him, I think Beatty really was much better defensively at third base at the start of the year. He really showed major improvement. Vientos is just not awful. but his offense just far outweighs anything Beatty ever did. So right now it does seem like, unless he's going to learn how to play second base, and if Jeff McNeil can't play anymore, or like he'd have to figure something out. But yeah, I don't think the future is very bright for Beatty. I would think he could be a trade piece.
Yeah, and Mauricio, you know, I mean, he seems like he's the future for second base eventually. So yeah, doesn't look good for him. All right, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
You got it. I'm just reading this. So Randy Arozarena has had a down year. He's hitting .213. He's got a .717 OPS and a .106 OPS plus, which is just average. But since June 1st, he's hitting .290 with a .920 OPS, 7 home runs, 20 RBIs. Now, most of those home runs are against the Yankees, but he's been much better since June 1st. And again, those pieces seem like, for a guy who's 2.5 years. But we've seen a couple of moves here in the last 2 hours. The Diamondbacks traded for Puck, another guy I hadn't heard too much. He's a left-handed reliever. Hadn't heard too much noise around the Yankees or Mets specifically on Puck necessarily. But listen, this is now the official opening of the 2024 trade deadline. It has begun. It has begun. Moves are being made. And Brian Cashman specifically, I mean, we could talk about the Mets and the trade deadline, and I did. I opened the show with it. And I think they should add. But the trade deadline is real. I mean, this is where Brian Cashman's going to either save this team, save his job, save his manager's job, or it's going to, like, this is an enormous, the Mets don't have the same stakes. Like, I think they should raise the stakes because of how good they've been, and this doesn't come around all the time. But ultimately, no matter what happens with the Mets, if they make the playoffs, they've had a great year, right? I think some expectations do change, and you do want, like, now it's playoffs. Before, it was just have a somewhat winning season, be good, play meaningful games in August and September, and you'll be fine. Now it feels like they better make the freaking playoffs. But I wonder, like, my thought is how much more do expectations change as they continue to win? But whatever the case, it's not nearly the same as the New York Yankees. The Yankees must, at the bare minimum, be playing in the World Series. Like, that's it. They have to be playing in the World Series. So, to have it even be classified as a good season. The Mets can have a good season a bunch of different ways. It's not the same level of intensity. They don't need it as much as the Yankees need it. Plus, they have a better team with less holes. This trade deadline, unfortunately, is more about the New York Yankees than the New York Mets, although it's about both of them. But right now, as deals are being made, Brian Cashman's got to get off his ass and go out and make deals. Brian in Westbury, what's up, Brian?
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, I can't complain. So I had a weird observation, but I'm usually good for a couple of those. But I assume you're probably familiar with Freaky Friday.
Yes, the movie of the switching, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm going to personally declare June 13th, 2024 as Freaky Thursday, because that was the day that the horrible loss for the Yankees during the day in Kansas City, followed by the J.D. Martinez walk-off homer off Tanner Scott at night. And that's when the Yankees became the Mets, and the Mets became the Yankees, it seems, because ever since then, it's been just weird. I'll put it that way. Being a Mets fan, weird in a good way, and I'm sure quite the opposite for all the Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis didn't come into my mind with all of this going on, but yes, I hear what you're saying. They're going in opposite directions, that's for sure.
Yes. Now, I did have a question. Kind of had my thunder stolen a little by the previous caller, but I did have a question about, my thoughts about Brett Beatty is I was all done with him until Vientos basically made me scared to throw him away, because, you know, what he's done, it makes you think maybe you should be a little more patient with Beatty. That said, I think he's performing so well that he might be a piece you're able to flip. I mean, there is a little bit of redundancy with both of them being third basemen.
Yeah.
Does this injury where Mason Miller is on the IL, I think that would have been a trade that probably might have been able to satisfy both teams in that they're both controllable and they both are, you know, at least Beatty is a good prospect, and and Miller, you know, I don't really like the idea that a guy who's not controllable for a team like the A's is available. It doesn't make sense to me. But if he's going to be available, at least I think Beatty might be someone who you can flip for him.
Yeah.
If they think of him, you know, if he's thought as highly as we thought of him, you know, maybe a year ago. But with him being on the IL, can he even be traded at this point? I don't know if it's illegal.
Yeah, I think he can, because I know the Yankees have traded minor leaguers on the. I don't know about if major leaguers make a difference. I got to look it up. I know the Yankees for a fact traded minor leaguers who were on the injured list, long-term injured list. They traded for Sonny Gray. They traded multiple prospects who were on 60-day ILs. So I know you can. I just don't know at the major league level. But Miller, I don't know how he is on the IL. I don't know how long he's on the 15-day IL. I don't know how long he's out with a. I believe it's in his left. I thought I read it was on his left hand. Which is his opposite of his pitching hand. So, I mean, I don't know. If you needed him, he can't pitch with a broken pinky on his other hand. When I played baseball anyway, I put my pinky and my ring finger in the same hole anyway. I hope no one clipped that, okay? That's just, don't be gross. I gotta be honest with you, this Randy Arozarena for Seattle's 12th and 22nd prospect seems really light to me, and seems very odd that Seattle would do. It seems odd that Tampa Bay would take that deal now, with the deadline 5 days away. Why would the Rays, for a guy, I just gave you the numbers. He's got a 920 OPS since June 1st. He has a history of hitting big home runs in the playoffs. He played extremely well and in the World Baseball Classic, so he kind of gets up for big games. That's the best Tampa Bay, one of the shrewdest teams in baseball. Every time they make a trade, it's a good one. That's the best they could do, is Seattle's 12th and 22nd best prospects for Randy Arozarena, who's been an all-star. Who, yes, struggled this year. And again, like I told you, some of his metrics are down. Some of his analytical stuff, his bat speed and all, you know, those kind of other metric numbers are down a little bit this year. I guess they see a trend. So I'm not opposed to trading them. They're not going anywhere this year. And this is what they do. You know, other team, and this is why I, you know, here comes my inner defending of Brian Cashman, because I got to do it once a show just to piss you people off. But Brian Cashman's not allowed to do this stuff. Like, Brian Cashman's not allowed to trade Arozarenas of the Yankees. We'd kill him for making a deal like this. But they're able to do it. They're able to trade guys they think are a year away from being a disaster. And maybe that's what happens, but I would have guessed a much better package. I would have guessed a much better package than an outfielder and a pitcher who are the 12th and 22nd best prospects in the Seattle Mariners organization. I would have guessed much better. And especially, everybody's telling you, it's a seller's market, seller's market, seller's market. And yet, that's the best they could do for Randy Arozarena, one of the shrewdest and best trading organizations in the sport, is going to trade away their all-star outfielder and get a 12th and a 20th prospect? Seems light. All right, Brian Cashman, let's go. I know you're awake. I know you're busy. I know you're on the phone. I don't know if you have me on the radio, but if you do, let's go. Let's go. You know I'm your guy, right? You know this, right, Brian? You know I take shrapnel all day. I get bombarded with nonsense all day in the idea that I just don't think you're the worst. That's all it takes to have everyone hate me. That you've somewhat pleased me over 25 years. That the slop we're seeing right now has pretty much not happened for 25 years. When we see it from every other franchise we support here in this city. And we haven't seen it from you. But we're seeing it now. And you're going to lose me. You're going to lose your best buddy. The guy in the trenches with you. You're going to lose me. You got to go out there and make moves. And if moves are being made now and teams are making deals now, you got to go do it. This Red Sox series is critical. Philip in Jamaica, Queens. What's up, Phil?
Thanks for taking my call. It's a pleasure.
Oh, well, always a pleasure speaking to you, Philip. What's going on?
Well, thanks. Before I get into my Yankee point, I do want to make a point with the trade with the Rays. This is the Rays, and they're notoriously known for making trades that are really good.
No doubt. You are 100% right. That's why I'm so puzzled by it, because it doesn't seem like a good one. But you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
The Rays have a way of getting these players. Maybe it's their, their coaches. Maybe they can coach a certain way that Seattle did it and make the players even a better prospect.
Oh no! I'm sure they see things they like in these players. It's not just like, hey, I'm sure they didn't roll a dice and say, oh, it came up 12, so give me the 12th best prospect. Like, I'm sure they like these guys, and they might turn out to be. I mean, we saw that, like, Siri wasn't anything before he got there, and Paredes wasn't anything before he got there. Rosarena was with the Cardinals, but, you know, he didn't come up a farmhand of Tampa Bay. He was with the Cardinals before they traded for him. So, yeah, they do this over glass now. Over and over again, they do this stuff. So, I'm with you. I'm just telling it like I see it in the moment. It seems like a light package. It seems like they could have done better for Randy Arozarena.
Yeah, but I want to make a Yankees point.
Yes.
It has to be LeMahieu and Cabrera.
Yes.
My thinking is, if they waive DJ LeMahieu, then the Yankees invested. But 100%. My point is, I like Cabrera. I think he has a nice swing. He's not playing enough. I think that's why his average is going down. So what do you think about when they waived LeMahieu to give Cabrera more playing time? So they won't need really a third baseman, I think, because what do you think of Cabrera being?
No.
No, you don't like Cabrera?
He's not the answer. I can't trust him to be the answer. They got to go out and add bats who have proven more than Cabrera, who've been better hitters for longer than Cabrera. I can't just say, oh, I'm jettisoning DJ and we're playing Oswaldo Cabrera instead. Not good enough. Just not good enough. He could be in the mix more. I'm open to that, but no, they've got to go out and get legitimate bats. They can't just rely on Oswaldo Cabrera. No.
Well, what about what he did at the beginning of the year?
He was an important. Then he cooled off. Like, nobody seems to remember that he cooled off, and he's last year he was awful. Like he's to the point where he's thinking about not hitting right handed anymore. Like he hits lefty against some left handed pitchers. Like I can't trust it. I'm not saying he's not good. I'm not saying I hate him. I'm not saying he didn't help the team at the start of the year. He certainly did. But no. They need better than that. They need more. They need to go out and get someone who could play third base. Oswaldo Cabrera can be a nice little piece, backup shortstop, backup third baseman, backup second baseman, play, you know, that kind of utility infielder role. I like it. And maybe play more than the typical utility infielder. I'm open to that too, but he can't just be the starting third baseman. You can't just cut DJ LeMahieu and say, here's our starting third baseman, Oswaldo Cabrera. No, not good enough. Need better. Need far better. Kevin in New Jersey. What's up, Kev?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up, buddy?
Long time listener. Yo. Real early in the morning, guys. But I wanted to make a Mets point. I'm a Yankee fan, but the Mets have a lot of trading chips right now before trade deadline, but the way management is going, are we going to go for pitching or are we going to go for the big at-bats? Marte, big trading piece. Like, do you want to give Marte up for a mediocre fielderman or a great batter?
You think you're going to get a great batter for Marte? You think you're going to get a mediocre fieldman, whatever that is? You think you're going to, I mean, you're not going to get anything. The guy can't play. The guy hasn't played. I mean, he's got a bone bruise that's cost him a month. I wouldn't expect Marte to play.
That's anybody come up, I would say, what was it, 2022?
Mm-hmm.
Marte is stud.
I know, but you're
that, I want to say he had like what
right now
19.
Yeah, right now if he comes back, you're going to be bummed he plays over Jeff McNeil. Right now, if he comes back,
well, Jeff McNeil is another piece. That's another piece that's like, who are we going to bring in? Pete Alonso. Why are we so much in love with Pete Alonso?
I mean, granted.
Well, what are you going to do with him? You can't trade him.
That's what I'm saying with Pete Alonso. Like, nobody wants him. Loving him too much, and we're paying him for not producing.
Well, because it's not that nobody likes the player. I'm sure people would be willing to trade for Pete Alonso, the player. They're not going to trade away pieces for Pete Alonso, who's going to be a free agent in a month. Like, and what are you going to get back if somebody who would be even willing to do that? You'd get prospects back, not someone to help the ball club. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Pete Alonso can't be traded anymore. And Marte, you're looking to get rid of the guys you don't need right now. Marte's been on the sidelines while you're winning. So, hey, why not Marte? Like, who's going to want Marte? He hasn't played. He's injury prone over the last couple of years. And when he's played, he's been okay. You want to go back to 2022 and tell me what he was? Okay. I think he's a good, solid player, but I don't know what you're going to get for him right now. You're looking to trade away pieces you don't need right now and get great stuff back. You're not going to get a great hitter from Marte. Why would a team give you a great hitter in exchange for an outfielder? You're not going to get anything from Marte. You're talking about the prospects. You're talking about Acuna. You're talking about Jet Williams. That's who you're talking about. That's who you're going to trade. If you're going to look for the great, you mentioned great big time, like game changing. Those are prospects. You want to trade Jeff McNeil? I could understand the thought of, hey, Chris, he's been terrible for a year and a half. He's hot for a week. Maybe he's upped his value right before the deadline. Do it. I can't imagine that. You're going to trade Happy Jeff right now with everything going on as they're kicking the crap out of the Yankees and Braves, as they're a game out of the loss column for the top wild card spot behind the Atlanta Braves? You want to start trading away the feel-good story of Jeff McNeil? I can't do it. Can't do it.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Manning calling signal, takes the snap, looks left, pops it left, first is wide open, touchdown Giants, in the left corner of the end zone.
Touchdown.
With 35 seconds to go, the Giants regain the lead.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
So a lot of baseball to start the show. We'll get into the football in a little bit. I just can't get over. I can't get over how trim and different Brian Daboll looks. Man, the guy, I guess he was doing Pilates. I mean, he looks like a completely different person. I've had the pleasure of being in his presence a couple times, working for Giants Radio. And he looks like a completely different person. I got to get on those Pilates. It's the worst part about the schedule. My morning Pilates ritual has been completely put to crap. Used to wake up every morning, run 10 miles, do whatever Pilates are. Now I can't do any of that. That's really the problem. Before this, I was a picture of health. This shift has really hurt my ability to Pilates it up. 888-808-1019. We're going to talk about Daniel Jones. We're going to talk about the new main focus of the Giants offense and what we've seen from practice, as well as the Jets, Aaron Rodgers, and what we've seen there. We've seen a lot of film. And to be fair to Daniel Jones, and I know I have not been necessarily. I don't care to be, should I say. I'm not out to be fair to Daniel Jones. Posting a video of him overthrowing one screen pass and making a big deal of it. If you hadn't seen that, that's made the rounds, where there's a video of Daniel Jones missing a screen pass. Like, come on. Same thing with the deep touchdown passes. I don't care. We have to see him play. We know he's capable of making screen passes, okay? We know he's capable of throwing the ball down the field with no pads on. We got to see if they can stay healthy, this offensive line, and then again, the Malik Nabers and what he's going to bring to this offense and how he already looks like the pinnacle of it and all the different ways they're trying to use him. 888-808-1019. Let's get to Alex and Lyndon. What's up, Alex?
Hey, what's going on, C-Mac?
What's up?
I
changing topics to the Giants, but I got to get something here about the Yanks.
I literally just happened to see his face on SNY, and I just, you know, when I usually come back from break, I don't like to go right to calls. I like to give you at least a minute or two of some topic, whether it be exactly what I want to talk about or whatever's on my mind. So that's kind of my style. So
yeah, I mean, again, I'm a Giants fan, though.
I'm not trying to change the subject, is my point. Yeah.
Yeah, but I agree. Dable looks good.
Yeah.
Hard Knocks, he's a little unfiltered, but that's him. That's what we get with him, right?
Well, the one thing I'll say, you know, it's funny because I said it last night, not nearly in the same level of Nick Kostos. You know, Nick Kostos does a great job for BetQL and here on the station. He went off about something I recognized as well. I saw a clip of him just going off about it. I don't know if I feel as passionately as he does, but I did mention it yesterday morning. Brian Dable has his feet up on that couch all the time. If you've seen the episodes, the guy, he's sitting there in a suit the day of the draft with the owners watching film or watching the blackboard going over all the different things they could possibly do at the draft. He's got his feet up on the table. Then he's talking to, I think it was,
I saw that scene too. Yeah, he was talking to Mara. Yeah, Mara was there too, I think.
Yeah, no, the owners, Mara and Steve Tisch, are sitting there watching, and he's got his feet up.
Yep.
Then he was talking to, I can't remember if it was a quarterback or if it was the wide receivers, but he was like, "Hey, do you want to be here?" Like, he's asking the guy if he wants to be here. Like, "Do you want to play for New York?" I think it was Jalen. "You want to be here?" And he's asking that like intense, throwing it at him. Like, the kid's just walking in the room. He didn't even take his backpack off yet. And he's throwing this like, he wants to get his instant reaction. I get why you would do that. But he does it like with his feet up. Like, the entire episode, he's sitting there with his feet up. I was like, why? Like, all right, when you're sitting around shooting the crap with Joe Shane, your feet are up. But like, when you're talking to the owners, when you're interviewing these kids whose life hangs in the balance, like, these are the most important days of their lives and careers, where they're going to go. And like, to just sit there and, like, have your feet up, it looked a little ridiculous. But I didn't, you know, Nick Kostos went off, called him a slob and everything. It was funny.
I like the guy. I mean, that's
I love the guy. Literally. I love the guy. I just thought it was a little weird that it was almost as if he couldn't sit on the couch without putting his feet up on the table.
That's a good point. I'm going to rewatch that again. Yeah. I just watched it last night for the first time. I caught up. It's been good. But the reason I'm calling, I called you June 14th. I was going to Fenway. And I was talking about how I saw Carlos Rodon at least 8 times this year, 7 or 8 times.
Yeah.
And I remember the call,
yeah.
Okay. So I started the jinx. It's on me. Because I met Matt Blake that day in Fenway.
Really?
And I told Matt Blake, I took a picture with Matt Blake.
I believe he's a new father. He just was, his wife is just having a baby. Congrats to Matt Blake and the Blake family.
Oh, that's wonderful. Congrats to them and his family. He's a nice, he is such a nice guy, by the way. We were talking, and we took a picture with him. And I said, "Matt, you are the unsung hero of this team." And ever since that day, it has been downhill with the starting staff. And I think that day, what are they, 9-28 or 10-27 or something like that? And I don't know. I went to Fenway with a 14-game lead, and I'm going to Philly next Monday.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll exercise some demons on the next road trip. I don't know if I should light some candles, some Kyrie Irving stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know. But I just wanted to, you know.
That's
I
remember.
I do believe in jinxes.
Yeah, no, I remember. And Rodon in particular was awful against the Red Sox.
Oh, my God, he got lit up.
Yeah, he was terrible in the game. And, yeah, listen, Matt Blake, the bloom is off the rose slightly. I still think he's done an incredible job and is one of the better pitching coaches in baseball. But no doubt, this rotation that was once the shining light of this team, and as big a reason as their success as anybody else, has completely fallen on their face. It's amazing how good they were without Cole, and it's like since Cole came back, they've been terrible. And he was awful in that game. The more I think about how Gerrit Cole pitched in that game last night, or 2 nights ago, excuse me, against the Mets is embarrassing. His whole body language. Like, here's the thing about Cole. He's too freaking good. He's the Cy Young Award winner. There are trends with Cole that shouldn't exist. I understand every team and every player has either a team or a player they perform well against or perform poorly against. We've seen it before with guys. Rosarena is a perfect example. Even if he's struggling, even if he's having the first half he had this year where he was miserable, he's going to pound the Yankees. That's just, there are guys who are good when they show up to a ballpark or face a certain pitcher or face a certain team or whatever. Cole is too freaking good to look the way he looks on the mound. body language, everything when he plays the Red Sox and when he plays the Mets. You can feel it. He's aware of it. You can see the body language when specifically when he takes on the Red Sox. You could see that when he faces Devers, he looks like he's off. And he looked off on the mound against the Mets. Instead of that confident, here I am, come and hit it, Cy Young Award winning Gerrit Cole, best pitcher in baseball, Gerrit Cole, he looks like a guy who's hoping things go his way. And it bothers me because he doesn't look like that against everybody. But almost all the time against the Red Sox and against the Mets, he has this body language like, yeah, I know things are going to go poorly tonight. Ryan in Mahwah. What's up, Ryan?
Yo, Big Mac, what's up, man?
What's up, buddy? How we doing?
I'm doing well. So I want to ask you, what do you think it takes for the Mets to land Garrett Crochet?
What do I think it takes for the Mets to land Crochet? Now, I also just want to put it there. I saw a report. We don't know if it's entirely true, but there are reports that his people are telling, his agent is telling teams, don't bother to trade for him. He won't pitch in the postseason unless he's given a contract, which I feel is hard to actually follow through with. But he wants a contract if you're going to pitch him in the postseason, and he has no interest in going to the bullpen. So I don't know how the Mets would fit into either of those things. I doubt very much they want to trade for someone and then give him a contract. They kind of, you know, want to be open for the future. So
are you talking like a long-term contract?
Yeah,
he wants
like a long-term contract. That's the thought. Now I don't know even that's true. So let's forget that. I just wanted to throw it out there because I just read it before I came in this last night. What would it take to get him? It's going to take big time prospects. There's a lot of teams out there looking for him. Like it's going to take one of the big three.
Okay, it's going to take Acuña, Jed Williams.
Correct. It's going to the other one that they got from. From Houston,
Clifford.
Yes. So it's going to take one of those guys.
Okay,
and probably more. Yeah. It won't take two or three of them necessarily, but it probably takes one of them as the centerpiece, and then a bunch of other things. And it might maybe a Beatty, you know, things like that's what you that's he's that well thought of, and he's it's him and Skubal are the two top pitchers on the market.
Right. So I think of David Stearns as like a pretty conservative guy. He's not going to go nuts and, trade away the farm for this season.
Right.
But I think that for a guy like Crochet, he fits the bill in that he's probably, for the rest of the season, going to be a bullpen guy just because he's never thrown this many innings in a season.
Right.
And then come the postseason, barring that report is false.
Yes.
You have Severino, Senga, and Crochet for your three guys.
Yep.
Being that he's under control for the next few years, I don't love the like you said before, Senga. He's not an ace yet for
right.
In our opinion. So, and I don't love the market this year for free agent aces. You know, you got Burns free, yeah. And then the big three old guys: Scherzer, Kershaw, Verlander. You start next season. You go into free agency this year with an ace. You have Crochet, Senga, and then maybe Manaea if, he takes his option. And, Peterson. So that's one less thing to worry about. You go into free agency with, $180 million payroll. So you say they get up to $300. You have another $120 you can spend on Soto. You can spend on a couple bullpen arms. And you're locked in with a starter from next year. So he, David Stearns might feel that if he's getting 2 years of control for a guy that he's trading for, he might be more willing to trade away prospects. And I think he would be such a good fit because he fixes part of our whole bullpen situation.
Yeah.
And he brings us an ace next year and the year after, barring that.
Yeah, no, listen, both of them fit. Again, I like Skubal better a little bit, but both of them would fit. I agree with you. They don't have a rotation necessarily next year, right?
I just think Skubal's going to take too much, and
yeah.
Crochet, some teams that are buyers are going to be steered away from him as a starter because of his innings count.
Mm-hmm.
So that might lighten the market on him slightly. I mean, people are still going to go after him with a lot.
Of course.
But if I'm the Mets and I'm David Stearns and I'm a conservative fan, And, you know, I don't want to sell the farm for a rental. I'm going after Crochet because it fixes a lot in the offseason with free agency. And it allows us to go after, you know, like Soto and some other guys.
Yeah, listen, I don't mind it. I think that's kind of what I'm talking about. I think getting an ace starting pitcher is exactly the kind of move they should be making. Right now, the way they're playing, I understand you want to build up the farm system. Again, you're talking about a guy in Crochet that I don't know if the demands of a contract extension are true, but he'd be heading into the second year of arbitration. You'd have 2 more years of control with him. He's making $800,000 this year. And next year, he avoided arbitration for an $800,000 contract. Next year, he's probably going to want, you know, a couple million, you know, I guess, second year of arbitration. I know that $800,000 is low, you know, $3-4 million next year. Just a guess off the top of my head. You're going to have an ace starting pitcher under control for the next 2 years. It helps you in your time frame of winning. It's like hitting free agency on a young starting pitcher next year in the offseason. What's the difference other than you're giving up prospects? And I get that, and you want to—that's what you want to do. The thought is, why do that? I could sign someone in free agency next year or whatever. Like, I get that, but I also want to win. And if you could put a guy at the top of the rotation, or you know, maybe both of him, and then in the playoffs in the bullpen or whatever the case may be, you add a difference maker like that, and you go into a like if you get Skubal or you get Crochet, and now you got them, Severino and Senga as your top three pitchers in a playoff series to go along with your offense, and if you added another bullpen guy in the back end, like now you've got a team that tell me why they can't win. Tell me why they can't beat anybody. I mean, doesn't mean they will, but tell me why they can't. That's the kind of thing I'm looking to do. That's how well they've played. That's the position they're in. They're a game out in the loss column. One game. They're a half a game behind Atlanta, a half a game out of the top wild card spot. And Atlanta's going in the opposite direction. Bolster this team. Get it ready for the playoffs. Try and win. Forget the future. Who knows? Again, 2 years ago, they won 101 games. The future was wide open. The window was wide open. Buck Showalter's here. This young, talented lineup. You got, you know, McNeil in the prime of his career. Lindor. You got Alonso in the prime of his career. You got all these answers. Everybody's pitching well. You knew the rotation was older, so you have to figure that out. But still, 100 plus wins, best regular season in forever. You got Buck Showalter leading it. It's going to be great the year after. They're going to be competing for a World Series. What happened? Who knows what happens in the future? Who knows what these prospects bring? I want to try and win now. Sean in Syracuse. What's up, Sean?
Hey, good morning, C-Mac. I got a trade proposal for you for the Yankees.
Okay, trade proposal for the Yankees.
Would you trade Ben Wright, Spencer Jones, and a lottery ticket for Vlad Guerrero?
And a lot? What do you mean by a lottery ticket? I know you're being sarcastic.
You know, some single A minor leaguer.
Yeah, some other minor leaguer. Okay, so an average, whatever other minor leaguer they would take, not a top minor leaguer, but you Spencer Jones and Ben Rice. For Vladimir Guerrero, who would be under contract for the rest of this year and next year.
Correct. $20 million all year.
Yeah, you know, you got to pay him, yeah. Yeah, I probably would. Yeah, I probably would.
That's what they need.
He's hot.
They need that.
And he's hot right now. I mean, he's been killing it. He's been killing it lately. Let me see if I can bring up his stats. Vlad has been, I know he just, I mean, he's been hot for a while. He just, I saw him hit a home run the other day. Let's see what he's done his last 7 games. Let's just go, okay, so ready? His last, on the season right now, he has got 18 home runs, 62 RBIs. He's hitting .296 with an .852 OPS. Those are all-star caliber numbers. They're not what you thought and hoped Vladimir Guerrero would be, MVP-type numbers at .852 OPS. MVPs are in the nines. 18 home runs is a little light for the guy you thought was going to be a premier slugger, but .296 is excellent. On base, .365 is very good. You would just hope the slugging would be a bit higher. But over the last 30 games, He's hitting 322 with a over 900, over 1,000 OPS. Okay, now we're talking. 34 slug and 66. So he's got 1,000 OPS in the last 30 games, and over the last seven games, he's hitting 462 with a 1.1 slugging. That's slugging. He's got a 1.6 OPS in his last week. So, I mean,
that's what we need.
I was the first one. I don't usually do this. I don't usually pat myself on the back or make it about me or say, woe is me. No one cares about me in the overnight. Nobody got me a Fudgy the Whale on my anniversary. Nobody talked about anything. Nobody cares. They don't write stories on me. They barely do videos. And by the way, when you do a video, it gets picked up by Awful Announcing. Maybe you should do a couple more videos. The people like Big Mac. Other than Yankee fans who hate Brian Cashman, they hate me. But we'll get there. We're going to get there together, you and I. After he has a unbelievable trading deadline and transforms his team into a World Series champion, me and you are going to be just peachy. I understand that. I don't typically make it about that. But I talked about trading for Vladimir Guerrero the day they traded Biggio away. It had to be a month ago. I was all over it. And yes, I have to admit, you'd have to trade Spencer Jones. Think about Vladimir Guerrero in the middle of this lineup. Like, you're not going to get better than that. Like, the thought process is the people who don't like it don't think he's a bad player. The people who wouldn't like that trade think, oh, great, another superstar, not good enough. You need to balance it out. I'd rather have two or three average guys. But you're not going to get two or three average. Maybe you get two guys. Maybe. But you know what? If you traded Spencer Jones for Vladimir Guerrero, you could still go out there and get Jonathan India for pitching prospects like that. You could get Jonathan India and Vladimir Guerrero. If you're willing to trade Ben Rice as well, Ben Rice and Spencer Jones plus for Vladimir Guerrero, and then you go out and trade pitching prospects or whatever and get Jonathan India, and now you have a third baseman and a first baseman. You cut DJ LeMahieu, and Rizzo's a bench piece. Now we're talking. 158, McMonagle here with you. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. Yeah. I mean, when I look at Vlad's numbers, he's killing it. Over the last 30 games, he's absolutely killing it. And over the last seven, he's been unbelievable. That's the exact kind. I mean, you put him in here and put him at first base, and you still go out and add another piece. You got him for this year, and you got him for next year, which makes it more. Which is a catch-22 with Soto, because if you have Vladimir Guerrero here, it makes it harder to sign Soto, but it also gives you a fallback a little bit if you don't sign him. Now, I would still rather have Soto. Don't get me wrong. Soto's the better ball player. He's proven that. I believe he's still even younger. Let me see. I believe he's younger. I know Vladimir Guerrero is not old by any stretch. Vladimir Guerrero is... He's born in March of 99, so that puts him at 25, so he's younger. He's younger than Soto. Or they're the same age. I don't know when Soto's birthday is. What's Soto's birthday? Can you look that up for me real quick? Not that it matters who's younger.
Soto's older. He was born in October of 98.
Okay, October of 98. So he's 6 months older. They're roughly the same age. But at least if you had him, it would be a little bit of a like, okay, well, we don't have Soto, but we have Vladimir Guerrero. But on the other flip side of that coin, it makes it harder to sign Juan Soto. But that would change the team. You want to talk about shaking things up? A guy who's outwardly spoken about hating them, a guy who they've competed against, a team in the Blue Jays who they don't like very much, and clearly he doesn't like the Yankees, that shakes things up, and it gives you a dynamic hitter in the middle of that lineup. That's the kind of move you go make.